Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
Welcome into the latest edition of the PFP. This is Jim Ozarski, Bucks writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I am filling in solo. Well, relatively solo this week as my co-host J.R. Radcliffe is on vacation. We'll have a couple special guests here coming up that I'll introduce, but wanted to kind of quickly just get into, you know, what we saw from the Bucks on their last West Coast trip of the season. Games in Golden State, Utah, Sacramento, and then the weird Midwest West Coast trip in Minneapolis. And, you know, 2-2, and the losses weren't that great. You know, a blowout in Golden State, a lot of, you know, kind of hype around the game, if you will. Klay's back, you know, no Draymond Green in Golden State, but, you know, the Warriors, obviously kind of still one of the better teams in the West, title aspirations. The Bucks, you know, had won six straight games. And then, quite frankly, you know, Bucks kind of laid an egg in a blowout, and they admitted as much after the game with Chris Middleton talking about, you know, we played bad. And Giannis, of all people, saying, hey, we didn't compete very hard. And so that's it's like, wow, okay, that's kind of how this thing is starting, which is weird because, look, the Bucks had started the break with big wins over, you know, Chicago and Miami and Phoenix. We know the list from a couple weeks ago. And so it makes you kind of wonder, like, all right, where's this headed? And then to go to Utah, a place they had not won, the team had not won since the turn of the century, and to beat a good Utah team at home, especially off that loss. You know, Brook Lopez returned, George Hill returned, and, you know, the team definitely, I think, got a lift from Lopez for sure. Definitely a pride factor involved in Utah. And then, you know, to follow it up, the Dante DiVincenzo revenge game, you know, tough win in Sacramento, you know, against a Kings team that kind of gave them all they can handle. And then Giannis misses the last game of the trip in Minnesota with right knee soreness. And look, the team that up until that point, they were 5-6 without Giannis. So a win would have even their record. 5-7, still not that bad when you're talking about missing a MVP candidate. But I'd say that the way they lost was really disconcerting. You know, they basically ended the trip the way they began it, with just getting sort of run off the court. You know, the Timberwolves made over 20 threes. Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards seemed to just do whatever they wanted to do. And it, you know, just not a great way to end it. Right. And I thought what was interesting, and I wrote about this over at jsonline.com, is, you know, this team is very aware of the East and how packed it is, and knowing that they kind of needed to turn it up a bit. And, you know, to go 500 on the trip, not the worst thing in the world, right? Better than 1-3, better than 0-4. And I would say that's a good win in Utah. So, you know, in all, you know, kind of right? I think the biggest takeaway would be the fact that Lopez did return. He was able to play each game, Utah, Sacramento, Minnesota. He was able to play 20 minutes against the Timberwolves, which Mike Budenholzer said was the next sort of big hurdle for him in terms of getting back to what would be considered full-time play. And he looked good. So, you know, what was interesting is in Utah and in Sacramento, I felt like offensively he kind of hung around the three-point line, was more of a floor spacer. He got into the mix a little bit defensively, which was good, but I thought it was important to see Brook Lopez be a force inside again offensively. And why is that? Well, that because there's a defender putting that forearm in the back, right? You got a couple guys running at you. There's a chance that you're going to go up for a play or a rebound, and someone's going to knock you to the floor, right? And I thought against Minnesota, especially in the start of third quarter, he scored all 11 points for the Bucks to open the third quarter, and some really physical play in there. You know, a reverse, kind of stepping down the baseline through traffic, going up and getting a lob from Jrue Holiday. I think there was also a three-point play where he kind of wrestled the ball away from Karl Anthony Towns, flipped it up, and was able to finish. So some real aggressive kind of physical play from Lopez, and it's big. You know, up until this point, it's all been about speculation with Brook Lopez, right? When is he going to be back? How much is he going to play? What's he going to look like? All unknowns. I would say at least at the start here, it's looking good for, you know, an all-defensive team member to come back. And I think what shouldn't be lost is something he said in Utah, which was he feels better now than he did before he was hurt. And, you know, he still couldn't pinpoint when, you know, this thing flared up on him. I mean, clearly he couldn't play October 21st in Miami. But let's be honest, you know, some of these guys get used to a certain level of pain, a certain level of discomfort that's just part of their life. So if he's talking about pre-surgery, I mean, where are we at here? The off-season? You know, are we talking about last year's playoff run? So if you're a Bucks fan and if you're the Bucks and you're a big guy who's so important to this defense and what he can do in the playoffs is feeling to that degree. Obviously you want to keep him there, right? You want to keep him there, but that's nothing but good news for the Bucks going forward, especially if you pair him with Serge Ibaka, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and you look at this East and what Joel Embiid is still doing, you know, what the Cavs are going to bring you, what frankly Boston is doing, right? And now granted they've got some wings, but those are guys who push, you know, put pressure on the rim as well. So that's a good thing. I think the return of Pat Connaughton, you know, that was another one. I was curious, what is his shot going to look like coming back from a broken hand, broken finger on that shooting hand? And lo and behold, shows up in Minneapolis and makes 5 of his 11 threes. And I think maybe just a couple that look off, right? And a few more he feels that could have went in. And I think if you're the Bucks and you're Pat Connaughton, that couldn't have started any better at all. I mean, we've seen this year with guys like Jrue Holiday. When he has been out, that shot hasn't fallen. Chris Middleton, when he came back from his knee issue this year, that shot wasn't necessarily there. We know Dante DiVincenzo struggled with his shot coming back. And to see Pat Connaughton, who was shooting at a career best, you know, over 40% from the three-point line, that's a huge, huge thing for this Bucks team. Look, he may miss a bunch of shots here this week against Chicago, against, you know, Washington at home. But I think the fact that he did what he did in Minneapolis kind of shows you, A, that he's healthy, B, that the shot is there. And that's a big deal, because this Bucks team, with Bobby Portis having to start every game, you know, in place of Brook Lopez, with Pat Connaughton, frankly, he started 33% of his games, you know, before the injury. George Hill being out since the end of January, this bench is the third lowest scoring bench group in basketball, you know, heading into this week. And while, you know, Mike Budenholzer has tried to kind of push that off and say, well, that's not really that important, you know, because they're usually paired with several starters. Look, this was one of the top scoring bench units just a couple years ago. They were, you know, middle of the pack, top half of the league last year. It matters. And we've seen this at times for the Bucks, right? When things go bad and it offensively, it's because the big three aren't scoring and there's really no one else that has sort of stepped up and filled that void. Wesley Matthews scores 8 points on this trip. That's the most he had scored in, you know, since the first month he'd been with the team. You know, Serge Ibaka coming along a couple double digit outings, you know, on this trip. That I think that was important. So if Connaughton's return, if Brook Lopez's return, whether he starts or not, that offense is coming with Brook Lopez. I think that's also going to set this team up for some success as they get down the stretch here and head towards the postseason. So it's been, I would say, look, you know, 2-2, not a great thing, just with how tight the East is. I think, you know, they win in Utah and they're like the number two seed. They lose in Minneapolis. You know, they tumble down again. So, you know, that's kind of a, yeah, we'll see. You know, this is a big Bulls game coming up. And then the Wizards, I would say, you know, they've got Detroit at the end of the year. So it's like Oklahoma City, Sacramento, Washington, Detroit are the four. I mean, you don't want to call them gimmies. I know the Bucks aren't going to call it that, but those are, you kind of need to go 4-0. They're 2-0 in that one. They got to beat Washington this week. You got to beat the teams you should right at this point. So, you know, we'll see. But I think the big thing for the Bucks is, you know, Lopez and Connaughton, George Hill to a lesser extent. What do they look like? How does this look? How does Mike Budenholzer maybe experiment a little bit with Serge Ibaka, Bobby Portis, Giannis, and Brooke? That'll be interesting to see what and how much they run out going forward. But, you know, I do want to, you know, real quick before I bring in our first guest, you know, to help me bridge the gap here without JR, is we're going to be joined by Lily Zhao from Fox 6 Milwaukee here in Milwaukee. Known Lily for years now. And Jeff Zilgit, our national writer from USA Today, he's going to join us a little bit later here in the podcast to talk, you know, maybe more global, national perspective on the Bucks. So I am thrilled to welcome in Fox 6 sports reporter Lily Zhao to help us out and to kind of break down what we maybe saw a little bit out west. And Lily, I guess I'm going to start with your kind of thoughts on the fact that, you know, they said they didn't play very hard in Golden State, bounce back, get a nice win. We know Giannis doesn't play, but it's still not a great loss in Minneapolis. And where I want to go with you is there's 11 games left. Do they really have, you know, can they do this again? Can they go 6-5 or 5-6 down the stretch here as the East still is so packed?
I don't think, you know, the road trip, while they went 2-2, you know, it wasn't the end of the world. And, you know, these guys know it. They're professionals. However, when you do see a loss like that without Giannis, considering the margin they lost by and the amount of turnovers they had in that game, it was a little discouraging because, again, this is a team that prides itself on doing everything right, the fundamentals. But then you have a loss like this without your star players. So you have to kind of think, if for some reason Giannis is hurt for a little bit, or not that we want him to be, can this team survive without him? And unfortunately, they couldn't do it against a Timberwolves team that was certainly streaking. They were hot and they couldn't get anything going. But that being said, this is still a really good team. So I don't think there's anything that we have to say, oh, you know, the wheels are falling off the Bucks train right now, right? With 11 regular season games remaining. But they want to keep things going because, like you mentioned, it's very tight in the East. They're second right now, but they can't afford to slip up, considering they do play the 76ers in a couple games, I think. So they have to keep the trend rolling. I know the rotations are still different. You know, I know Brooke and Bobby and those guys have played together for the first time in forever, it seems like. So while it wasn't, you know, a 3-1 road trip, a 4-0 road trip, it was still, at least they were at 500. I don't think the wheels are falling off. I think they'll be okay whenever Giannis just come back.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Brooke being back. That was obviously the biggest news of the trip. George Hill, probably to a lesser degree. Pat Connaughton shows up with a broken hand and hits 5 threes. What's the balance then, I guess, do you think, Lily, with Mike Budenholzer working those guys back in? Or is there no balance? Because Brooke and Pat and George are veterans. Now, George was in here last year, but obviously has history with these guys. Like, the idea of experimentation or working them back in, do you think that's not as big a deal down the stretch here just because of who these guys are? Or is there still going to be a little bit of, well, you know, is it Brooke and Serge at times or Pat? And you know what I mean? Like, where do you kind of stand on three pretty important players coming back here in this last 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think, you know, Coach Budenholzer has a pretty good problem to have, right? Because you have these talented players to experiment with in the lineup. Like you mentioned, could it be a Brook and could it be Serge if Giannis is just taking a breather because you have all three of those guys out or whatever. Yeah, I mean, there's just all these different sorts of lineups that you can have. And I think this is the time right now to really experiment with it and see kind of what your maximum lineup can be. And granted, we know Brook is, you know, he's the number one guy there, but Serge, capable guy at center as well. We've seen Bobby do it. We've seen Giannis do it with Brook out. So, you know, these guys are not that they're interchangeable, but they definitely can play in multiple lineups, which I think is going to really bode well for them as they head into the playoffs. That versatility is going to help them. In terms of just integrating Brook back, I mean, we've already seen his impact these last couple games, and having him back just really, you know, elevates this team in the locker room, on the court. So, you know, while I think there is some sort of a period of just getting him reacclimated to things and reacclimated to those guys around him that he hasn't played with for, you know, a full season now, I don't think it's any sort of worry. I think they're going to figure things out in the lineup. But, you know, Pat Connaughton said after the Timberwolves loss, it's just, where's this team at now? It's just kind of figuring out those lineups and getting the best out of those.
Another reason I wanted to have you on was you and I, we first met when I was on the Packers beat. When I came back from Cincinnati, you were based in Green Bay. And now that you're here in Milwaukee, obviously more involved with the Bucks. The Brewers, obviously, March Madness was just in town. Your perspective on how this team maybe, as defending champions, this is an interesting thing for me. I'm in it, right? I'm there every day, and there's Bucks fans in my mentions and comments, and that is what it is. But I do pay attention to the Packers. I do pay attention to the Brewers. And with the lockout, and especially with, I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, Aaron Rodgers drama, right? Up in Green Bay, you know, the Badgers were a story, the lockout in baseball. Do you think somehow, some way, the defending NBA champions, I don't want to say were forgotten about, but I feel like at times, Lily, it was, the season has been sort of, you know, I don't know what the right phrase is, almost like a let's just get to the playoffs kind of thing. I feel like, you know, there isn't a ton of Giannis should be MVP or Giannis should be Defensive Player of the Year, or is this team, you know, should they go for the top spot in the East? Like, I don't feel that locally to a degree. I don't know. What's your perspective? Because you're obviously have a more global view of sports in the city and the state.
You bring up a good point though, Jim, because you're right. I get the same sense as you, right? It's the Bucks are playing good basketball. They're doing their thing. Giannis is still Giannis. They're getting these key guys back, but there's not this sort of, you know, hype in town, you know, Milwaukee, at least in my opinion, there could be, but there's not this hype. There's not this like all eyes are on the Bucks. And, you know, we can say that because there are different pro teams and, you know, the Badgers just lost. So, you know, eyes are on March Madness, but it just during this time of year when a lot of big things are kind of colliding, it was free agency, the combine's coming up, Rodgers signs his, you know, supposedly has signed his contract, Devontae Adams gets shipped out west. So there's just a lot more of those big, you know, big news things that are kind of not overshadowing the Bucks, but taking away kind of any sort of, I guess, more eyeballs from the Bucks. So I do kind of get what you're saying is that, you know, I think that there's an expectation now from Bucks fans that, you know, this team's going to make the playoffs. They're going to have hopefully a deep run again. They have a guy named Giannis who's really good. So they're like, well, you know, they're doing their thing right now. There's not a push for that top seed, but we'll kind of get back into the swing of things when they do make the playoffs. I think that's when the energy and the hype will get bigger. But you're right. It has kind of just been a lot of Packers, their free agency moves, and then the Badgers just losing. When is baseball coming back? And now we know. And then there's the Bucks. So, you know, I'm excited to get down the stretch here and finally kind of start talking about the Bucks on a bigger platform here.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of crazy to think about, because I know Bucks fans, I'm sure you see this too. It's sort of this, why aren't the national media types or talking heads, you know, talking about this team or Giannis specifically, and I look at it as to kind of like you said, well, locally, you know, I listen to talk radio, I listen to stuff. I mean, there's definitely kind of a feel, which is, you know, if you think about it, you've been in state long enough too, like to see how far this franchise has come in just a handful of years, right? Like where just getting to the playoffs was a thing, and now it's
let's just get to the playoffs. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's like a you know, a thing with the Packers. It's guaranteed every year, right? You're like, they'll make it. We don't have to really talk about the Bucs until they make the playoffs, kind of thing. So I 100% agree with the sentiment there.
Right. Lily, thank you so much for helping me out this week as my co-host J.R. Ratcliffe is on vacation. I look forward to seeing you around Pfizer Forum as we get running here. And of course, everyone, make sure to tune in to see Lily on Fox 6 on a regular basis.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, let's just get right back into it with my good friend and colleague from USA Today, Jeff Zilgit, our national NBA reporter. He's so kind to join us this week. And Jeff, I just spoke to Lily Zhao, a local reporter here at Fox 6 here in Milwaukee. And we were just kind of talking about this latest Bucks trip, 2-2, some disappointing losses, a couple okay wins, but really the thought was, can they be a 500? Can they kind of have this, up and down finish to a year when the East is so packed? There's only 11 games left. They've got Memphis coming up, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, Chicago, Boston down the line. And the reason I wanted to have you on was just to get your perspective. You follow the entire league. You're watching all these games. Where do you see the Bucks kind of fitting standing right now as we hit this last, few weeks of the regular season in a really, really competitive Eastern Conference?
Yeah, so that maybe the one thing that affords me a little bit different outlook is that I don't have to watch the Bucks every day, every game. And I don't have to, if you're a fan of the Bucks, I don't have to live and sigh with every Bucks win or loss. And so, going 2-2 on the road trip that you mentioned, maybe playing 6-5 or, 500 basketball the rest of the way, that's not going to bother me too much, because I look at the experience of this Bucks team and they know how to pace themselves. And what's required to win a first round series isn't the same that's required to win in the second round. And that's not the same that's required to win in the conference finals, and so on and so forth. And so you don't want to be playing NBA finals basketball, even here in, as we move into late March, into early April, you still have room to grow. And I think, the coach there, Mike Boonholzer, has tried that in different ways over the years. I think they've probably maybe settled on a nice little formula for them that certainly worked out last year, that, maybe winning 60 some games isn't the answer when it comes to winning in the playoffs. And so I'm not going to be too worried about how this Bucks team finishes, unless it was something egregious, like, 1-10, 0-11. But I'm just going to put my faith in the fact that this team knows how to win at certain stages of the season and proved that last year. And so there shouldn't be a whole lot of consternation, up until they get into a playoff series where the other team has 3 victories and they have less than that.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jeff, because it's if you look at the schedule, this week they start with Chicago. There's a game against Washington. The week ends in Memphis. Now, a couple weeks ago, they beat Chicago. They beat Miami. They beat Phoenix. I mean, they had some good wins. So how do you then, as you watch the league and the way this goes, like, how do you view that? Do you consider wins as good wins, or do you say it's more about being healthy and how they play? Like, I guess how, like, when you're thinking about, okay, can a team, specifically the Bucks, can this team win again? What are you kind of looking for if it's not so much the record, so to speak?
Yeah, a little bit of how you're playing, so like, how are your losses? Not yours specifically, but how are the Bucks' losses? Are they bad losses? Where are you in terms of efficiency, your offensive and defensive efficiency? Are you losing these games but still putting together some good offensive and, decent defensive numbers? Are they close games? Are you working someone into the lineup, say, like a Brook Lopez, who has missed a majority of the season? I think you have to take that into account. So unless you're a team like Phoenix right now, which is going both for, they don't even really need to win many more games to, clinch that first seed. But unless you're a team like Phoenix, I think there's room to acknowledge that, hey, we're going to have some losses. And the schedule that we're playing, yes, we have a Memphis team that is trying to do something special, hang on to the second seed in the Western Conference. Yes, we're going to play a Washington team that's probably out of the play-in game format unless something drastic happens. Yes, we get a Chicago team that's, not only in our division, but, right there with us, by and large, all season as some of the better teams. And so I think you look at those, but I don't think like you make determinations based on those outcomes. I'm going to be, really looking at, all right, how does this team get going once the playoffs begin? And I know I'm kicking the can down the road a little bit on that, Jim, but I've seen too much of it from too many teams over the years where maybe I get worked up about some late season losses. And then all of a sudden, they're playing great basketball by mid-May, and they're all of a sudden a championship contender. And maybe you've seen the opposite work out a little bit too, that a team, really finishes the season strong, and then they get to the playoffs, and it's just not quite there for them. Maybe it's a matchup situation. Could be an injury. And so that's why, I take it, hey, let's get to the playoffs, see where things go, and then I can start making some better determinations on how I really feel. Because, Jim, you've made the point, and you've watched it all season long, about how bunched these teams are and sort of the elevator ride each team takes, in the standings a little bit. I mean, Cleveland not long ago thought that they had a chance, maybe to have one of those top three seeds. And, now they're going to struggle to hold on to the sixth seed. And really, we shouldn't have this conversation talking about the elevator rides without mentioning the Boston Celtics, Jim. I wasn't sure where they would be at the beginning of the season. I certainly didn't think that they would be in this position where they're fighting for, spot 2, 3, or 4 in the East. And so they've really done an excellent job after that sort of slow start they had. And I can tell you, I didn't see that coming from the Celtics.
No, you're right about that. And there's a late game. We've got a little while yet before that final Bucks-Celtics game at Fiserv Forum at the end of April. That could be really interesting, especially if each team is really fighting for some sort of seeding. But, Jeff, you mentioned how you play. And I would be remiss. Bucks fans would want to hear from you on that national perspective. Giannis Antetokounmpo and the MVP. And I'm going to toss in Defensive Player of the Year here because I know he won it a few years ago, Jeff. I don't know if this is homerish of me, but I feel like what he was asked to do for the majority of this season without Brooke Lopez and the fact that the Bucks were still one of the top rim-protecting, paint-protecting teams in the league, you could go either way here. I don't know if you want to start with MVP or if you think if he's not in that DPOY conversation, I don't know. I know in Milwaukee, Giannis is a guy. He told our good friend Sam Amick at The Athletic, he doesn't really care about it. He's not thinking about it, which I do believe him. But fans care. And it's probably Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, and Giannis. How are you shaking out the race? And it feels like it is actually a race here with 11 games or so to go.
So, look, I do think in the big picture, and I'm getting ready to write about this, Jim, and you and I have probably had this conversation recently offline, is I would extend it that I do believe the three guys you have mentioned, Giannis, Nikola, and Joel, are the top three candidates. I do believe there's cases to be made for DeMar DeRozan and what he did. I also believe there's a case for Ja Morant and what he did with this Grizzlies team this year. And I look at MVP voting over the years. Jim, more than 7 guys get votes. Okay? So you're going to take a look at Steph Curry's probably going to get a vote somewhere in there.
Right.
LeBron's probably going to get a vote. I think this is a real deep field of candidates. I think the top 5 are pretty much who they are. And then I do think the top 3. Now, how I wanted to order them, I don't really know just yet. If you're asking me today, Jim, I would probably just lean toward Nikola Jokic, just by a tad. But all 3 are putting up some pretty fantastic regular statistics and advanced statistics numbers that are really, you know, amazing to see and really indicate the level that those three players have played. And when you start even digging down a little bit further, Jim, you talk about the things that Giannis was asked to do in without Brook Lopez for a majority of the year. Joel Embiid, for however you want to place blame, credit for the chaos that was there for a majority of the season until the trade deadline, he did have to play without an all-star in Ben Simmons. And however you feel about Ben, he's a three-time all-star by the age of 25.
Yeah,
that did alter how the Sixers were going to play. And then if you want to take a look at what Nikola Jokic has done without Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., and think that Denver team, you know, has a shot at a top five seed or top four seed, however they're going to go. Like that, then you really start to take a look at how much these guys have done while missing some very important players on their teams. They all do so many things well. Scoring, Jokic probably isn't quite the scorer that Embiid and Antetokounmpo are. All three of them can rebound. All three of them can pass. You can probably put Jokic and Giannis 1-2 when it comes to passing. Embiid and Giannis probably defend a little bit better than the Joker, but the Joker has made an effort on that end. And so, Jim, if like you want a little bit of a cop-out, and I feel this way, honestly, if indeed you're voting and somehow you felt that they are, you know, sort of 1A, 1B, 1C, however you want to order them, if you've watched basketball all season long, and then when you come to turn in your vote with the NBA, in whatever order you have those three, from my perspective, I'm going to be fine with. I'm not into shaming the voting public for their votes. I also believe, to that point I just made, that if you put in the time and you're covering the NBA and you're on the road, you're watching a lot in person on TV, and you believe that however you want to look at one of those three players is the MVP in front of the other, I don't think we need to all acquiesce to what the NBA Illuminati think should be the MVP. And I truly feel that way. It's probably taken me a little while to come to that conclusion and everything, but I want voters to feel comfortable in their vote and not being shamed into thinking if you vote player X, that you've made some grave mistake because it should have been player Y. And I know that's a long ramble here, Jim, and everything. And I do agree with your point about Giannis and Defensive Player of the Year. I think Mikal Bridges from Phoenix is going to get a lot of love on that award. And the last thing I'll say about this, and I don't like this at all, but I do think it happens. I think it's maybe voter subconscious, maybe voter in their, you know, consciousness, is because Giannis has just won two relatively recently, that I think it's hard for the voters to give him three of the past four. It's reasons why I don't think Kobe has more than one. It's a reason why I don't think LeBron has more than his four. That there's this idea we should probably, spread the love, share the wealth. Just a little bit. And again, when Harden wins, when Westbrook wins, when Steph Curry has won, and when Durant has won, certainly deserving candidates, there's no doubt about that. But I do think there becomes, I think people call it voter apathy a little bit. There's, Giannis has had his. He's just coming off a finals MVP, man. Embarrassment of riches kind of deal. And so that's why I'm not sure that ultimately, after 100 people turn in their vote, I'm not sure that he's going to be the one who wins. And at the same token, if he ends up winning, I'm not going to have any complaint with that.
Right. Honestly, Jeff, I agree. I think, I don't know if I'll get a vote this year. I voted last year for those awards. And I think you're right. This is one where I think what 1 through 3, however that shakes out, it's one of those rare seasons where you have that. And I don't think anyone other than respective fan bases are going to say you were wrong or whatever it may be. And that is interesting. The voter apathy, fatigue, whatever you want to call it, is an interesting part of the human element to all of this. But again, this year, I think if you were doing this podcast in Philadelphia, Denver, or like you are here in Milwaukee, I think if people are being real with themselves, either one of those guys can win. They've earned it. They've deserved it. Right. And at least this year, I don't think if Giannis doesn't win it or win even DPOY or whatever it is, if you're a Bucks fan, it's because I don't know if this is the year it'd be. Well, he already got his two. I think it would be because Jokic and Embiid earned it on their own, if that makes sense. Yeah.
No, look, I'm with you on that too. I tend to be, and I've given my votes to players in the past where, you know, I didn't care if they won the year before. I didn't care if they've won two in a row. Didn't care if they finished 12th the year before. I try to dig in and, you know, who had the best overall season and that kind of thing. Look, I really look forward to seeing the results. One of the things I'm working on right now, Jim, and you and I share some notes on every now and then, what we have coming up is, you know, I'm going to take a little look in here soon, you know, not only at the MVP race, but, you know, take a look at some of the closest MVP races in league history when it comes to three people, not just a two-man race or anything like that, but let's dig in and, you know, there hasn't been many times where the top three were like within 150 points of each other.
Right.
It doesn't happen very often. And I'm looking at this year as one of those seasons where, you know, those three guys that we've been talking about, you know, could end up within 100 points of each other, or 125 points of each other when the final voting is done. And it will illustrate the point we're making of just how close it is and how people view the race slightly differently. Just depending on how they view the game.
Right. Well, Jeff Zugit, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to join me this week. As always, you can find Jeff and his NBA coverage at usatoday.com. And Jeff, thank you so much. We'll speak soon down the line.
Sounds good, Jim. Have a good rest of the regular season.
So thanks to Jeff for joining the PFP this week. With JR on vacation, I'll admit, I don't think I could do one quick buck as well as JR does. So that's why we squeezed in two guests this week, but we are going to go into my favorite segment. I hope it's your favorite segment because I'm always angry. And yes, things still made me mad this week.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder!
I'm upset.
Say it louder!
I'm upset.
That's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
Look, I get that these supercomputers in our pockets are amazing devices. While the bar stool argument is done forever, right? Because you could just take out the phone and Google whatever, you know, piece of trivia or stat you are trying to debate someone over. It's generally, I would say, decent things, right? You can get around a little better, find a restaurant that's open, you know where you're going, all those things. However, I don't need to be a part of the soundtrack of your life. You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand that you have access to all of your music, all of your themes, all of your playlists, however it is you're feeling. And that's awesome for you. I'm glad that you can pull up whatever music to fit the vibe that you're currently on. I just don't need to be a part of it. Put the headphones in. They come in all shapes and sizes. The big over-the-ear noise canceling, the buds, the AirPods, whatever, you know, device you use. That's you. I don't need to hear the soundtrack of your life as you're living your life, as you're walking down the street, as you're going through the airport, wherever, in the grocery store.
getting coffee. I don't need to hear it. Oh, it drives me crazy. It drives me absolutely crazy when I'm trying to live my life, do the things I need to do, and I need to hear the music that you are picking for your life. It's kind of like when y'all are, people are talking to family members. I mentioned this in a previous what's making me mad with FaceTime or the video, and I'm watching the family speak to someone holding up to their ear, and they see me behind them. I just don't need to hear it. Pick your music, live your life, enjoy it. Have that soundtrack to your life. Catch all the vibes. Just keep them to yourself. That's what's making me mad this week. I want to thank you all for once again joining me on the Point Forward podcast. JR will be back next week. I also want to thank our guests, Elise Al from Fox 6 Milwaukee, Jeff Zilgit from USA Today Sports, for helping me get through this. Thank you, our loyal Point Forward podcast listeners, as well as our listeners on 97.3 The Game FM in Milwaukee. We appreciate y'all. And of course, always get at us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook. And don't forget, jsonline.com/deal. It's only $1. You get all your Bucks information. And if you're, into Packers, Brewers, colleges, local news, you get all of that as well. Thank y'all. Talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.